technology. I replaced the large paper clip with a bulldog clip, so that the microphone is now much more like a lapel mic, much more like a lavalier mic. Not a lavalier mic, I'm a lapel mic. And it's clipped to my collar, where it's riding solidly, it's not flapping in the air. 18 minutes, 37 seconds for the first mile. All right, I'm not breaking any speed records today. Let's see if we can't pick that up a bit. So yesterday was actually a pretty good day. I got some progress out of the way. I didn't get a lot, but I got some. And some was a lot better than none. I still have more to do today. And with any luck at all, I'll have the house to myself up until about 2:30, when I have to go pick up kids from school. So, yeah. Of course, a week from today, I have a big dental appointment. Not looking forward to that. But I've crossed that day off my calendar because nothing's going to happen that day. Just one of those things. Let's see, what else? That's about it. I've been keeping kind of a low profile, trying to keep things tracking, not doing very well at it, but at least not letting things like Facebook and Twitter and the rest sidetrack me. Of course, the problem with that is that I feel sort of cut off. I'm feeling a little isolated, in spite of the fact that I have daily conversations with you all. Somebody asked me yesterday how many days in a row it's been now since I've been doing this walk, and I don't really know. That's at least a month, isn't it? I didn't miss a day in July. Might have missed a day in June because of travel. Although I was back from Balticon. Have I missed a day since Balticon? I don't know. I don't remember. I'm going to miss a few days. Going forward, it's inevitable. But, it's been a nice straight stretch here. I've been trying to think of other stories to tell. Things like working in the factory when I was a kid. I don't talk about it much because it was decidedly illegal. But I suspect that anybody who hears this confession won't really be looking to bust anybody. And I suspect also that, given that it was over 30 years ago, any statute of limitations on criminal prosecution is probably expired. But the summer of my freshman year, high school, my father took me to the factory to work. Now, this was when minimum wage had just been bumped up to $1.50 an hour. It would have been about 1966. Summer of 66. Is that the Woodstock summer? I think so. And the deal was, the company paid me in cash under the table because I was too young to be working in a factory. I was, And it was an interesting time for me because I earned more money in cash per week, a whole $40, I think, because I was getting paid $1 an hour and we were working 40-hour weeks, and occasionally overtime. Although, if I remember correctly, I only got paid straight time for overtime, but. I was already working illegally. I think I've mentioned that I was working in a factory where I occasionally had to hide on the roof or take a walk uptown. So the work was long and it was kind of grubby. The place was it was a light manufacturing, and I did a lot of bottle labeling. The little seals that are on the caps of bottles, that are, you know, brittle little plastic seals that keep them from loosening in transit or being tampered with without some sort of idea. Put those on. Those come in a solution that's not water, but something that keeps them in their expanded form, like a wet sponge. And when you take them out, there's a particular flip with the finger and thumb, and it opens up and you pop them on. And the idea is you pop them on so they're just about even with the top of the cap. And then over the next half hour to 20 minutes, what they do is they shrink up and lock onto the bottle and conform and lock it into place. This is an interesting thing. I did a lot of that. I did a lot of packing. I did a lot of filling of number 10 cans. We had a machine that would put the lids on cans. The mixing group was on the fifth floor, and there was a pipe that ran down into the fill unit down below. And the fill unit down below could hold quite a lot, most of a batch. So they would mix up a batch in the morning and then load the fill unit. Then while we were packaging up that, they would start the next batch along. And the challenge was, if we could get the batch filled and canned up before the next batch was ready to come down, then we get a chance to sit down a little bit. And so we did. So this was always something like hot fudge or chocolate syrup or number 10 cans of eggnog base or things like that. And quite frequently it came down hot, and I mean hot, 180, 190 degrees. Hot enough that it would burn you. So you'd fill a can up to the lip. The can cover guy would had on heavy insulated gloves. Pick the full can up, put it into the cover, the covering machine. Step on, pull his hands back, step on the foot treadle, and a ram would stuff that can up into the cover, and then a seamer would go around the edge and crimp the edges of the can together to make a number 10 can full of whatever it was. Then they'd take it and put it on a rack for cooling. And it would cool in the can. And part of that was part of the sealing process. It was full, number one. Number two, it was quite frequently hot and sterile coming down, and the goal was to get it into the can while it still was sterile, so that as it cooled, the vacuum seal inside would set up as the product cooled inside this big number 10 can. Now, we also did cold stuff. We did gallon paper cartons of salad dressing. There's a steakhouse, I don't know if it's still there or not, in New England. I think it started in Portland, but it might have started in Massachusetts. There were several in Portland called Valley's Steakhouse. That was a big thing growing up, was to my grandparents would come and take us out to dinner at Valley Steakhouse and on our birthdays. And so we each got an opportunity once a year to go out to a restaurant and have whatever we wanted off the menu. And then we'd go shopping for a toy and then go home. So it was a once a year sojourn into the big city for us, which was a big deal. So one day, and I still have a scar from it, one day I was doing salad dressing. And the deal with the salad dressing is it's the same fill unit. Pipe comes down, fills the fill unit. This time it's with cold, or at least cool, salad dressing. Thousand Islands, ranch, all kinds of stuff. Mostly creamy stuff like that. And so you fill a gallon container and then hand it off to the staple guy. Because these weren't glued shut like you would find a gallon milk carton glued shut. These are stapled shut. And so there's a big pneumatic stapler that drove heavy metal staples into the top and across the top of these heavy oak tag waxed paper cartons. They're very much like a paper milk carton, only gallon size. So these are big things. And one day, and we trade off. So one time, one batch you'd fill, one batch you'd, next batch you'd staple. And so you got to change up a little bit. Working on the factory line was always a challenge for how do you stay engaged. And the best way was to talk with each other, tell stories. And being a kid, I liked to listen to all the stories that the adults told, because quite frequently in the factory they were stories that you couldn't hear other places because they were not necessarily polite stories. So that was quite an education by itself. And one day, it was in the middle of the afternoon, and I've been doing this for years. This is like third year I'd done it. Third summer. I was up to a whole buck and a half, I think. And got the thing, staple, chunk, chunk, chunk. Get the next one, staple, chunk, chunk, chunk. The next one, staple, chunk, chunk, chunk. And you know where this is going. And chunk, chunk, chunk into my thumb. Sure as hell. Now, I was, in all the years that I was there, I was the only one who actually managed to get my thumb in the stapler. And I was lucky that it wasn't actually stapled to the carton, the gallon carton, because then I wouldn't have been able to move. As it was free. So I had this huge metal staple stuck through the corner of my thumb. Bled like a stuck pig, of course. And so I went to try to find the guy who had the needle nose pliers, because what we had to do was find a pair of heavy pliers to hold it still, and then the needle nose pliers to uncrimp the one side and then pull my thumb off it, and without bleeding too much on anything that was going to be considered A, consumable, or B, visible. So yeah, industrial accidents do happen. The other one I had that was sort of serious was I was doing a can cover job, and I didn't quite get the can all the way back onto the ram. And so when I stepped on the tread to jam it up into the cover, it didn't go. It fell short by about an inch. Now, there wasn't an inch clearance, so what happened was this number 10 can full of scalding hot sticky chocolate slammed up into the housing, and then the seamer that makes about 5 or 6 passes around and around really, really fast picked up the loose chocolate and strewed it right across my chest. So I had little cuts. No, not little cuts. I had little burns. Jesus. Brain. A little burns all across my chest, about 6 inches, where the hot chocolate had stuck to me. And it was, you know, it wasn't like it was boiling, but it was darn near. It was like 190 degrees. And, yeah, that hurt. So I had a couple of accidents. Mostly I was pretty accident-free compared to some of the other guys. I didn't fall down any elevators. I didn't get run over by a fork truck. Didn't have any pallets dropped on my toes. Actually, learned a lot about work and what I didn't want to do. My father thought I was exceptionally lazy, and he was absolutely right. And there's some things that I not only am really lazy about, I don't ever want to do. I just don't ever want to do them. And I think that's pretty normal. The challenge, of course, is to find a way to do them anyway. To find a way to do what needs to be done in order to keep on going. And for me, it meant being able to go buy my own school clothes and then not have to answer to my mother as to why I didn't want to wear the plaid shirt. So an elder daughter took a little trip over to Target and bought herself a pair of shoes without asking permission whether she could go or whether she could spend the money to buy the shoes. She just went and did it. Now, my wife was a little put out with that because, well, why should she have to spend her money? Because she doesn't have a job. Why should she spend her money to buy shoes? We should be buying her shoes. And the answer is, of course, that we probably wouldn't have let her buy those shoes. I saw them. They're the classic, I won't say Doc Martin, but very lug-soled, black, Oxford-style, very heavy kind of clodhopper shoe that I just think is going to work just fine for her, but which I suspect might have earned a bit of approbation had Mother been along to pass judgment on the purchase. And I think that was the point. I'm not quite sure how to make that point available to Mother. Anyway, I'm not setting the world on fire here in terms of walking, but the real question is whether or not this new setup with the microphone and the bulldog clip will keep from getting more artifacts. That click, click, click thing yesterday was maddening, because I opened the file and I saw like 60 of them in the first 15 minutes. It's like, oh my God, what happened? It was ugly. So anyway, today's Thursday, which means it's trash day. It's also sprinkler day, so it's not going to be a recording day. I still have plenty of audio to edit. I still have plenty of text to get ready to go to ebook and print, so I'm not lacking for things to do. But I am at the back gate. 1836, not bad. 1927 for the whole second part of the walk, which is a little more than a mile. But I am at the back gate. Tomorrow is another day, and I will talk to you then.